Welcome to the Garbage Pod. One pod, one load of garbage.
29 and 28.
I remanded in custody.
There's something curious about this broadcast.
Hello everybody and welcome to episode 3 of the Garbage Pod Tap Room. This episode is a little bit different than usual, firstly because I'm flying solo, and secondly because we're going on a little field trip. Those of you who have listened to episode 52 of the Garbage Pod will know that we recently spent a few days in Lincolnshire. A few miles down the road from Skegness is the quaint market town of Wainfleet All Saints, which is also the home of one of the UK's most renowned independent breweries. Although Bateman's breweries specialise in mainly cask ales, you'll find Bateman's bottled beers in pretty much all the major supermarkets. As we were in the area, I thought it would be a travesty not to pay them a visit. Everyone at Bateman's was very hospitable, and we managed to have a chat with their head brewer and production director, Martin Collymore.
We are a well-established family brewery. We've been brewing on this site for 140 years, so we've been at it a long time, yes.
Yeah. So how many different types of beer do you actually produce?
Well, in the course of my career as head brewer here, we have produced literally hundreds of different beers. At the moment, our main concentration is on our four main brands. We're mainly a cask-conditioned beer brewery, so I'll concentrate on the cask beers. We produce our standard bitter, which is XB. XB bitter is 3.7% alcohol.
Yeah.
It's flavoured with traditional English hops of Goldings and Challenger. It is still the biggest selling brand that we have. So most of what we brew is Bateman's XB.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, we also have a high gravity beer, a high gravity bitter that we're probably more famous for, which is called Triple X.
Yeah.
Triple X is a 4.5% alcohol beer. That's the one that has won the Champion Beer of Britain at the Great British Beer Festival in the past, and has won countless other awards as well. It's a high gravity beer, so because of the nature of beer, the stronger it is, the more resistant it is to oxidation in the pub cellar. So our Triple X tends to be the one that people go for as a guest beer.
Right.
As well as that, we do, and have done for many years, a porter called Salem Porter. This is Bateman's Brewery. The name of the company is George Bateman and Son Limited.
Right.
But the address is Salem Bridge Brewery.
Oh, right, okay.
And that's where Salem Porter comes from.
Right.
Which is a 4.7% alcohol beer made with lots of roast malt, dark malt, chocolate malt,
mm-hmm.
and roast barley to give it its character. Gives it a very dark colour. The overwhelming flavour probably is licorice, actually.
Oh, right.
Which is an interesting character.
Yeah.
And is very popular, especially around Halloween for some reason.
Salem, yeah.
So we're coming up to that now. The fourth beer in our permanent range is the most recent addition. It's Bateman's Gold.
Right.
Bateman's Gold is our version of a new style of beer, which has become known as American IPA.
Mm-hmm.
American IPAs are heavily hopped golden beers, so the clue's in the name here, Bateman's Gold. So it's a light golden colour. It's hopped with American hops of Cascade and Chinook.
Mm-hmm.
These give a very citrus character. As the beer matures in cask, the character can change from grapefruit to tropical fruit.
Right.
It's very much a citrus character that we get from those two hops.
Okay.
And it actually changes throughout its life, because as you know, cask beer has live yeast in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a living beer. It's not like a sterile beer that...
Yeah.
Once it's in the container, that's it.
I won't say any more about that.
So for that reason, the beer is not finished when it goes straight into the cask. You need to mature it. And we typically mature our beers for between 3 and 10 days, depending on the strength.
Okay.
Before we allow it to go out into trade.
Wow.
So part of the production process is maturation inside the cask.
Okay.
This conditioning process takes place in the cask, so we call it cask conditioned beer. It has to be simple so the brewer can understand it.
Probably difficult to say in the terms of pints, but how much beer do you actually sell a year?
All of it. No, we're not the biggest brewery in the world. So typically we will do 6 or 7 brews a week. A brew will consist of, on average, 75 barrels. A barrel is a unit of 36 gallons. Not a container you put beer in. Containers you put beer in are called casks or kegs. A barrel is a unit of volume, which is 36 gallons or 163.659 litres. Not that that's indelibly marked on my brain, but that's the figure that we use. So that's the volume that we use. Typically the casks are 9-gallon casks or firkins.
Yeah.
So we're looking at producing a brew of 75 barrels, which will produce 300 firkins. And we'll do that 6 or 7 times a week.
Wow.
Does that answer your question?
Pretty much, yeah. That's impressive. And the different times of the year, are certain beers more popular? Like you were saying that you have the Salem Porter is popular around sort of Halloween time.
Darker beers are more popular in winter and the lighter beers are more popular in the summer. But that's a bit of a sweeping statement. That's a bit of a... Well, it's too easy just to say that. all year round, we sell the XB and the Treble X and the Gold. The Salem Porter tends to sell better in the winter. That's true.
Okay.
And the Gold tends to sell better in the summer.
Because I've noticed at beer festivals lately that a lot more the darker beers are tending to become popular. At the Great British Beer Festival this year, the darker beers, the stouts and porters, incredibly popular this year.
Beers, like everything else, going the popularity, the in vogue thing goes in circles, I'm sure. The beer I've talked about, Bateman's Gold, is a style of beer that's a recent style of beer, as an India Pale Ale, American IPA. That style developed when American microbrewers thought they'd go back to the old original recipes. The mistake they made, of course, was that they added the hop rate that people would have added in Victorian times, forgetting that in those days the active ingredient of hops to make beers bitter is a thing called isohumulone. The humulone levels in hops in those days would have been around about 1 or 2%. And now it's between 10 and 20%.
Brilliant.
So by going back to the original recipes, they're actually adding 10 times as many hops as they were originally intended to do. But nevertheless, that has now become a style in its own right, which is a beer that mainly gets its flavour from the hops. The traditional English ales will be a blend of flavours from the malts, the hops and the yeast. The yeast provides... an extraordinary amount of flavour to the beer, and that is balanced by malt, sweetness from the malt and dryness from the hops, and that will give you what traditional old-fashioned brewers like I like to brew, which is balanced beers.
Mm-hmm.
So that is my old-fashioned way of brewing beer, sadly.
Well, it's not a bad thing. I mean, I think things should be brewed the traditional way, because otherwise, you know, the old techniques will die out, and I think that's important that we keep British beer as it was originally intended.
Yes, there is a place for traditional beer, but there's also a place for new and innovative beers, because the other thing that gets me excited is that there's a whole new range of different hops that are being produced.
Right.
And in Britain, the British Hop Association are developing new varieties of hops with different characters. And that provides an exciting palette, if you like the artist's palette. This is the brewer's palette for creating different characteristics, different flavours, different beers, new exciting beers. So, yeah, there's a place for traditional beers, there's a place for innovation or new product development. Both are exciting.
So, next step for us now, you're kindly going to allow us to go on the tour.
Yes, we will get somebody to show you around the brewery, who is experienced in brewery tours. If you then have any further questions, technical questions, which they can't answer, please let me know, and I will do what I can to answer them.
Brilliant. Great. Well, thanks for talking with us, Martin.
You're very welcome, and enjoy the tour.
Thank you.
After the chat, Martin arranged for a personal guided tour of the brewery before it was open to the public, so we were shown round by Nadine, who I'm sure you will agree did a fantastic job.
Okay then, so this is where it all began. As you can see from the plaque on the wall, George Bateman and Son, and the 140th year anniversary has just served last year. So in 1874 then, George Bateman was a farmer, and to be perfectly honest with you, he wasn't very good at it. So he bought a lease in an established brewery called Crow's Brewery, about 200 yards down the road from here. He then started to brew a beer called Small Beer at 2.5%. This beer though wasn't brewed for the pubs, it was brewed for the men working in and around Wainfleet. Now, 140 years ago, about 1,500 men would be employed by the farmers, and they actually had an obligation to supply the men with any drinking water. And this is because Wainfleet was a major port and it became flooded, and it made the water slightly salty to drink. So as part of the boiling process, they used to boil the liquor and water, and used to give all children half a pint of good, honest ales for breakfast. Wouldn't be allowed today, would it?
Not really, no.
Okay, did you come in across the railway?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, you didn't come by train, did you?
We did, yeah.
Oh, good luck getting home again. In 1880, the Grand Railway came to Wainfleet and was actually made a compulsory purchase. Now, with the money George made from the sale of the old brewery, he bought the house at the top of the lane called Salem House. And he also bought this, the stable block. And that's when he decided to put the brew house up onto the first floor. Now, moving on to 1921, Harry, George's son, took over the brewery after the death of his father. And one of his first jobs actually was to lay off the workforce, sadly due to economic turndown and because the men didn't return after the Great War. So he sent the women to work. But unlike today, where we all enjoy a nice cold pint, we drank tea, and it greatly affected the sales again. Harry was upset by this, and he sat down with his head in his hands, and he needed to find a solution, and find one pretty quick. And the solution, my friends, is behind you. In its day, it was a 5-sail flour mill, and it was so expensive to repair the sails, he removed them and he turned it into a bottling plant. And that's why there's a bottle now at the top of the weather vane.
Oh, right.
But he didn't just bottle beer here, he bottled port, brandy and gin, and he kindly paid them all out of his own pocket.
Wow.
Now, a decision was made to purchase pubs to sell our beer, and over the next 40 years, about 130 properties were bought within a 50-mile radius. Now, the company traded very well until a gentleman called Dr. Beechin, may have heard him on the news this week, took away the railway system. And obviously this affected our sales greatly again, because this is how we used to transport our bottled beer to the major towns. So just like everything else, I had to find a bit of a solution. And the solution still sits in the yard today. He bought a fleet of 1965 Austin lorries. Now, at the same time, keg beer. Watney's Red Barrel was the leader in the field. And again, we started to brew keg beer, but it was unsuccessful. So, in 1971, an organisation called CAMRA was formed. And what they did was they promoted our beers, they helped us through good and bad times, and introduced a new hedge brewer in the 80s called Martin Collingmore. He actually still works on site today. I think you've seen him this morning.
Yeah.
Don't ask him any questions though, because you will get value for money and you will be here this time tomorrow. So he took us to award-winning levels, and we won 5 at the Great British Beer Festival, the Supreme Champion, and Mild being a winner as well. And we continue to win awards all the time, not just for the beers that you see at the pumps, but obviously the ones when we enter competitions as well. Okay, so moving on to 1985, then the third generation, two brothers and a sister, had an argument over the ownership of the brewery, with the younger brother John and sister Helen wanting to sell their shares to another company called Whitbreads. Bit of a swear word around here.
I can imagine.
Had this happened, sadly the brewery wouldn't be here today, and it looked like the rest of Wainfleet, rather grotty and run down, and would probably be a housing estate. Thankfully though, the eldest brother had a little bit more sense, and he also had a monopoly on the share of 51%. And what he did was, he persuaded the others to hold back their sale until he could raise enough funds. So, Monday to Friday, he used to commute down to London on the train, trying to find someone to help him. And he wasn't very successful. And as a last resort, he put an advertisement in the newspaper. After a few months, and he almost gave up, a gentleman rang him up, and he said, "I don't have any money, but I actually have the means and contacts to help you." That gentleman is still the chairman of this company to this very day.
Wow.
So on the 2nd of February 1988, a little bit of a deal was concluded, and they handed over a cool £9 million. And what they did was, they handed over the shares, and they locked them into trust, so another family member could never threaten the future sale of the company. Unfortunately though, 60% of the estate had to be sold with a buyout, and it's hoped by the end of this decade, we may be owning up to around about 90 properties again. Now, we're going to have a little bit of a step back in time now. We're going to go into the Victorian brew house. Mm-hmm. I haven't got a tape to mind your head because you're not 5'11". You may be, though. On the 4th step up, there is a girder. So just be a little bit careful when I shout hard hat area.
Okay.
Okay, if you'd like to follow me this way.
Sure.
The floor can be a bit wet with the boys cleaning as well because it's Friday. Okay, so up to 2002 then. So not that long ago, this is where all Bateman's beer would have been brewed. Now, I know they mentioned the water in the area 140 years ago was unfit to drink, so they introduced this machine up here called the Wort Copper. And basically, they boiled the liquor or water around about 180 degrees, and they'd add hops to it to give bitterness to the taste. Now, the hops we use are ones like these called Goldins, and they're actually from the Worcestershire area. But we use hops from over the UK and different parts of the world as well. And if you cast your eye just back up to the Wort Copper again, you can see there's a gauge that runs down the centre of it. And this measures the volume in barrels. This machine is capable of making 70 barrels, which is the equivalent of 20,000 pints. Now, we start to brew at 4 a.m. in the morning, then again at 9:30, and then 2:30 p.m. daily. The new brew house, which is 3 times the size of the Victorian one, and obviously can brew on a bigger scale, now allows us to remove the afternoon brew.
Right.
So the boys still have to be on site at 4 in the morning to make sure you guys get a good pint. That's dedication for you, isn't it? Okay, if you'd like to pull me through to the malt stores.
Okay.
Okay, the malt stores, we've got 4 of them. And it basically is what it says on the tins. It's where we store all our grains. So we have wheat, barley, rye and oats. 2 of our beers, Combine Harvest and Autumn Fall, consist of all 4 grains to make them very complex in their flavours. We receive the grains in and we store them in dark rooms. And this tricks the grain to thinking it's still germinating. And when we want to use it, we roll it to get rid of any spores, and we stop it from doing this before we mill it, before we brew with it. Okay, so the grains we use come from this country, and we know that because it's sampled with the British origin on the sacks.
Right.
And as you can see, we use a company called Malsters, and we use Fossets of Castleford and Crisps of Norfolk as well. Now, have any of you guys got a wheat allergy?
No.
Okay, I'm giving some grains to sample now. If you don't want to eat them, just simply smell them, okay? Now, one of the first grains is this one, which is a pale malt. And this one will be found in XB at the pumps. Mm. Okay, so the flavour you would be experiencing there is a little bit like Ovaltine or Horlicks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the next one is a pale crystal malt. And this one will be found in things like Triple XB. Now, the Triple XB got its name from the squadron plane that they actually flew in, and that's why it was named this beer. Exactly the same grain, just been roasted a little bit longer. Got like a cinder toffee type taste, a little bit more sticky.
Yeah, that's completely different.
Mm. Actually smell the roast a bit more on that one. Okay, so the next one was a pale chocolate malt. Don't be fooled by the name, though. It's a bit like Willy Wonka's around here, not all as it seems. And this one will be found in things like port, Guinness and stout. It's also in the Salem Porter, which you have on the pumps at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also put in one of Martin Collymore's first project, which is when he brewed the Victory Ale, which is obviously the ale they made when they won ownership of the shares. And we actually still sell it to this day. It's been roasted for about an hour and a half.
It's a lot deeper.
It is, a lot darker.
Mm.
Most people say it's got like a burnt charcoal type taste. A bit like burnt toast, if you like.
Okay.
Okay, so there are the grains. What we're going to do now is go to the mill machine. And I'm going to tell you how we get the grains ready before we brew with them.
Okay.
Okay, you'd like to follow me this way.
Sure.
So the mill machine. This one's 80 years old. And it replaces the one which stands in the yard, and it actually came from the old brewery in 1880. Now, it was manufactured by a company called Robert Bobby of Bury St Edmunds, and in its prime time, it was the Rolls-Royce of milling machines. In fact, it was so good, the manufacturing company actually went out of business purely because it never broke down and it never needed a repair, and it actually still works to this very day. I only wish my car was made by them.
It looks in very good condition.
It is. The boys sometimes have it up and running as well. Okay, so the grain which we've just seen in the malt stores is drawn up through the hopper at the back of the room.
Right.
And it's passed by these two sets of rollers. We've got one on top here and one directly underneath. Now, so the grains we've just seen, it passes through and it almost pops the husk, if you like, into a flower-type form.
Right.
Now, when it's got to this stage, it then goes in this tube here, which you can see,
mm-hmm.
and it travels upwards and across the ceiling. It does this with pressure being applied. And then it goes to another machine called the mash tun, which is where we're heading next, if you'd like to come this way.
Okay.
Okay, so the mash tun, just a bit of a recap then. It goes in that tube, it travels upwards and across the ceiling, and if you just cast your eye back, you can actually see where the grist tank or hopper is situated, just above you here.
Yeah,
now
yeah.
It feeds through into this big blue cone, and if you can see, there's a big blue wheel at the base of the cone. It needs to be open to allow the grist to flow. To the right of you here, you will see a big black valve, and it needs to be open to allow the liquor to flow. Now, the reason we call water liquor is because it undergoes a process called Burtonising. And basically, it's where all the salts, minerals and ions are all added together to make it chemically balanced. Now, in 1953, the water we use actually came from the River Haven at the side of the windmill, and it was hand-pumped. What a job. But in 1953, when the water became poisoned, they had to find an alternative supply from around about 30 miles away. It takes an incredible 99 pints of water to produce just one beer. So, thankfully, our local water company now allows us to take it from the mains. And what they do is they put it in big tanks above you and they heat it or Burtonise it in there between 63 and 65 degrees. Now, this temperature is important. It has to be tested throughout.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be significant sugar in the grain before it enters into the fermentation tanks next door. And the temperatures have to be maintained. If neither happens, it will result in something that happened a few months ago when we suddenly watched 25,000 pints being poured down the drain.
Wow.
It's that important. Okay, so just see here, there's a trigger. And it needs to be decompressed to allow the grist and the liquor to blend together. Now, all three operations have to be opened and worked at the same time. And they call this a three-armed man. Now, this creates something called a brewer's wave because it works in an elongated S-type shape. Now, when the mashing is complete in here, it transfers back up to the work copper, which is what we saw when we first came in.
Yeah, yeah.
And I also explained this is where the hops are added. It draws up a chamber and it cascades over some plates, referred to as a Chinaman's hat. Now, the boys on site, though, call this a little bit of something else. They refer to this action as rollicking, because where you might get one for 4 days at home, it only lasts 90 minutes when you come to work.
Oh, right.
Now, it's from the work copper, it then transfers back to the hop back, which is where we're heading at now. Just that machine over there.
Okay.
Coming out of Doctor Who.
Should we get through?
So the hot vac. Big machine. It's 14 foot deep. And this is where we add all the other main ingredients. And we've got Challenger and Fugles and two American hops used to produce the yellow bloody gold at the pumps.
Mm-hmm.
Or should I say called gold now. And this one's in a kettle type form.
Okay.
Feel free to touch it if you want.
Okay.
It's normally extremely sticky, obviously with a few people having their hands in it.
Yeah. It's quite nice. Hmm.
So that's one of the hops which we use in the gold. Now, one of the other ones we use is one called Chinook. This is what gives you your after-kick taste to your beer. But unlike this one where it's in petal form, this one is in pellet form.
Oh, right.
You can smell that.
Yeah.
You may be able to tell me, or may not be able to tell me what it is.
I don't know, because I'm getting a kind of a, I don't know if it's kind of a gingery kind of.
People do say that. It's actually a fruit. That's a clue.
All right. So it's going to be something citrus, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
It's passion fruit.
Okay.
And when you taste your beer and it just starts to go to the back of your throat and it starts to go down, that's the aftertaste you get. It's very popular. Okay. So one of the other hops we use, and we use it a lot in Combine Harvest and a lot of the festivals in October and November time, is one called Galaxy. But again, don't be fooled by the name. Also in pellet form.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's different.
I quite like this one. Any idea?
Possibly grapefruit or something like that.
Do you know, some people do say sometimes say that for that one, but this one's lemon and lime.
So yeah, so I'm getting a, yeah.
Was. Okay, so the cascade goes in the hot back, and then what we do is we add these to the fermentation tanks last minute, and we refer to this as something called double hopping.
Right.
Now, before we go into the fermentation tanks, I'm going to tell you a little bit of information. Then I'll tell you the reason why I've told you out here rather than in there. The temperature of the wort is too hot for the fine ingredient yeast to be added. So we put some heat exchangers in the bottom of the tanks, and they're maintained between 19 and 24 degrees. What happens is cold water is pumped through to maintain the temperature. And two components are used for fermentation. One is gas or carbon dioxide. And what happens is it slows the rate of fermentation down.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is we add a machine called a rouster, which is what that is on the centre picture of the wall over there. And basically, it's a big, long, naked garlic arm. It goes right to the bottom of the tanks and it draws up the wort. Now, it introduces air into it and it revitalises itself, and it blows back over itself. And what happens is it starves the brew of oxygen. It's going to do the same to you guys too. When we go in there, I don't know what we're going to find because I haven't been in this week. It may be quite gassy and fumey. So if you feel a little bit unwell whilst you're in there,
mm-hmm.
don't wait to tell me. Okay. Just come straight back out. Okay, so that's the following way. Oh, this is a good tank. Let's have a look what's in
here. Wow.
This is a bottled beer, I think. I'm going to check with the boys on the way out what they're actually brewing, because I'm not sure of the abbreviation on here today. It's like a new one. This is a Combine Harvest. This is the same as what's in that tank, but again, I'll check with the boys. And this one's empty.
Okay.
Okay, so the process in here then is repeated four times within a 4 to 7 day period, where the beers are in the different tanks. Cold water is then pumped through at a lower temperature, around about 15 degrees, and then the brew is put to sleep. So if you check the gauge on the front, when they get to 15 degrees, the beer's having a little bit of a siesta, if you like, it's resting. Now what happens is, the yeast will be scraped from the top, and the first 50% will be sold to companies like Marmite. The other 50% will be used ready for the next brew. Now years ago, the first 50% used to be scraped off, and it used to be sold to farmers for animal feed. Now, because it's full of gas and carbon dioxide, it actually made the cow's stomachs explode, so you can no longer sell it to them.
Wow.
Now, these ones here hold 18,000 pints, and these ones hold 25. Now, we'll do a bit of an experiment with you today. If you'd just like to go to the tank when we first came in at the end. Okay, so just put your hand on the side of the tank, just to cool it down. And if you place your hand just over it, you can just about feel the heat which is rising from it. And at the same time, you just cut your hand like this, bring it back to your nose, like that. You can smell the hops,
yeast,
and aromas which is going on in there.
Yeah.
Obviously today, these are all controlled electronically, but years ago, they used to use the old-fashioned elbow method, like they used to test the baby's baths. Okay, if you'd like to head back that way, please.
Okay.
Very much. Okay, so all the equipment then has to be cleaned, and the tanks are a bit like cleaning your car, if you like. They're pressure washed and then they're sterilised, ready for the next brew. Now years ago, the hot back, and actually part of the reason the new brew house was open, actually had to be hand cleaned. You've got to remember, it's 14 foot deep, it's going to be around about 90 degrees in there, and it's got a copper top. So the two smallest people would be chosen on site that day.
Mm-hmm.
And what they would do, they would lower them down in turn by the harness which is hanging on that wall over there. in 10-minute intervals, one in, one out, watching, with a shovel right to the bottom. And used to have a gentleman called Happy Larry, which they nicknamed him, who used to do it. Because when he went in there, he used to pass out, because obviously he used to get the smells all going and it was hot. And all the hops related to the cannabis plants. He wasn't fit for any work at the end of the day, but still got paid for it. And I think he was quite clever. So all the equipment actually was still working. We fired it up, and it used to run off hot coals. And I'm sure if you speak to your parents and your grandparents, years ago, two bottled beers never quite tasted the same. And that's because they couldn't simply maintain the temperature like we can electronically today. Mm-hmm. And that's why they used to fluctuate in flavour and taste. Okay, we're going to go through to the new brew house now, if you'd like to come this way.
Crichton, what are you doing, man?
Oh, sir, I'm listening to the Garbage Pod. It's a podcast I found in the podosphere.
Okay, so the new brew house then works exactly in the same way as the other one, but obviously on a bigger scale. So you've got the work copper here, you've got the mash tun behind you, and then you've got the hop back. But unlike that one out there, this one is self-cleaning, and it works on a whirlpool-type motion, a bit like your washing machine, if you like. Unfortunately for boys, though, the mash tun actually still has to be hand-cleaned. So unlike the two smallest, the two thinnest boys, actually have to take it in turns, go through the hatch, which is just over there, and use the ladder, which is hanging on the wall.
Wow.
It's deeper than 14 foot because I've seen it being cleaned. But due to modern technology, they do have a light on at the top. Okay, so the new brew house then cost a cool £500,000 to build. And everything in here, including down to the screws, is second hand. It was all resourced from old breweries which were closing down. Now, it was supposed to open around the February time, but there was a little bit of a delay, and I'll tell you why. They went to put the roof on, and some numpty didn't quite read the plans correctly, and the pillar over in that corner wasn't in the correct position, and it delayed the opening of the new brew house. It was eventually opened on the 16th of March 2002. Now, if you cast your eye just up on the wall here, you can see some names on some plaques. Now, these people came to the opening ceremony of the new brew house, and the party was supposed to last 8 hours. 72 hours later, these names of shame decided it was time to roll home. So Stuart, who owns the company now, huge, huge fan of sport, because he used to be a PE teacher, opened something called the Beer Members Club. And this is where this idea came from. Basically, it cost £99 to join, and then £35 every consecutive year after. And it's good value for money, and I'll tell you why. You get a limited edition polo shirt, far better than the one they give me to wear to work. Your name is Shane, brick in the wall for life. And you also get a pound diary. Now, this pound diary is not to be sniffed at, because you and a friend, so choose wisely, get to come and party here free of charge about 8 times a year. And we normally have a congregation of about 100 to 150. And we challenge you to drink 1,500 pints in 4 hours. Hasn't quite been done yet. We have scraped the barrel a few times. Now, when you get back into the bar, and if you cast your eye up, you'll see there's a playing card on the ceiling. Because at these parties, we put on music bands, but this particular one, we had a magician which came, and he performed a trick on a lady, and she thought he was rubbish because he couldn't find her card. So he clicked his fingers, and to the amazement of the rest of the bar, this card magically appeared on the ceiling, and nobody actually knows how it was done. But we will find out, I'm sure we will. Okay, we're gonna go back downstairs now and take to the oldest and coldest Victorian passageway. Okay, if you'd like to follow me this way.
Okay.
Okay, so welcome to the oldest, and I always say coldest, Victorian passageway, because believe you me, in winter, it is freezing down here, and it is like standing in front of a wind tunnel which comes through there. So, if you just pass dry upwards, you can see basically where the hot back is. And I hope the engineering looks as grand as it does, and it doesn't come down anytime soon.
Yeah.
But it's also in this area then, the beer's destined for bottling. And what we do is, we put them in big tanks, and we transfer them across the road, and we're central to a company called Marston's of Burton and Trent. You may have heard of them. Marston's Ale and Tye was on telly not so long ago. Mm-hmm. So they take away our beer then, and they carbonise them to make them vegan and vegetarian friendly. And they probably do between 3 to 4 million pints for us every single year. Now, years ago, we used to bottle Guinness. And sadly, we lost the contract, because as time went on, Guinness became very modern and trendy to drink. So they changed the shape of the bottle. And as you probably found, our bottling equipment isn't very modern and trendy. And it can put the label in the correct position on the bottle. And that's actually why we lost the contract, and it was a huge blow for Bateman's. Now, there's 5,500 bottles around the brewery. It's the biggest, fullest collection in the world. There is a bigger one in Belgium, which has 10,000, but they're all empty. So, as far as I'm concerned, it does not count. Okay, so next door, so the beers go to the racking area, and they add a product called isinglass. And basically, this is from the swim bladder of the sturgeon fish, formerly known as fish guts. So that's what's in your beer. Now, have you heard of the term called the wet allowance, about WHET?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, should I jog your memory?
Yeah, please.
Okay, myself and other people work here get a free daily allowance of beer, which is 2.5 pints or 60 pints a month, if you like. So quite often when we come down here, maybe at this time, or pubs 12, pubs 2, and the boys want a break, they're quite often drinking a beer. It's actually still perfectly legal because it's part of their working requirement, if you like. So years ago then, the men and the women used to congregate here in their break times, and Mrs. Bateman actually despised it. And she hated the men and the women being together having idle chit-chat. Just like today, the men were left here to drink. But I think she was looking out for the ladies, and I'll tell you why. Because obviously at the time, our beers would have come from the bottling plant across the road, and we used to go and choose the bottled beer, which we fancied. We could have six if we wanted. And what the girls used to do, they used to put it in a big crate. And they used to get this crate together, and they used to carry it back up to the stairs. And they used to sit in front of their desks throughout the whole working day and drink all day long. Now, she actually still sits in front of the same desk. It's in front of the same warm coal fire. There is no central heating in the main offices, so I think he's very down to earth. Okay, if you'd like to follow me this way, change to the cellars. A little bit about what goes on in there.
A word of warning before we continue into the fermentation room. It's very loud in there, and in certain parts you may struggle to hear what Nadine is trying to say. But don't adjust your volume levels too much, okay?
Okay, so the beers are sent to the fermentation room. They've been to 7 to 10 days. They're sent down here and we put them into different size casks. And we've got three sizes. You've got Firkins, 9 gallons, hold 72 pints. Kilrigan's, 18 gallons, hold 144 pints. And then you've got the big boys over there, the barrels, 36 gallons, hold 288 pints.
Wow.
So they're sent down here, we obviously put the beer in and the isinglass, and then we put a label on them. Then they're sealed and they're sent to the chambers next door. But the chambers next door are set at around 20 degrees. And this allows for the hops, yeast and sugar to carry on producing carbon dioxide, which has been broken in its solution. There's also next door that the cask is sent out through something called wholesale division. So therefore the information on the label is very important, and I'll tell you why. But this one, see, it's autumn full, so it gives you the product name. Next part gives you a gile number, an identification number. Who brewed it, where it was brewed, where it's dispatched from. Then the next bit gives you a recipe for date, and it's normally 4 to 6 weeks after it's left the transportation area, where it's been held for around about 10 days. Now before, one of the big barrels in the transportation area, £110 in tax per barrel has to be paid. So we transport the beer out then, and we deliver to Wales, Scotland, Cornwall, Kent, all over the place. So once again, the label is very important, because when it arrives to the landlord, it instructs the landlord how to stillage the beer. One of his first jobs is to bring it down to their cellar temperature, which is around about 11 degrees. Then he has to stillage it. This is stillaging, what you're seeing here.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens through transportation, it gets shook up. The yeast, hops and sugar starts to deposit in the belly of the cask, and if you try to open it on arrival, it will basically go up like a can of Coke. You get covered head to foot. So they stillage them for about 48 hours, then they spile and tap them. You've probably heard of it. This is a spile here, and what you do is you drive it through the seal of the cask,
yeah,
just here, to reduce the pressure. But it also reduces the shelf life of the beer to just 10 days. So when you go to Wetherspoons, and your beer is a pound cheaper at the pumps, you simply buy an end of shelf life beer. There's nothing wrong with it, because obviously they can get you a bit bigger volumes. Then he inserts a tap, referred to as spiling and tapping. And what he'll do is he'll take a sample off of it, and he'll look at it. He will never hold it up to the light. You hold it away from the light, it's normally against something which is red, to check the clarity of the beer. And he will smell it, and he will taste it. If the beer smells or tastes sultrous, then it's regarded as green and it's not mature yet. And I have to leave them probably for around 3 to 5 days. Other bitters like Timber Potato Landlord bitters can take around 8 days to mature. So the next bit then, they have to connect them to the lines of the pub. And I'm sure you've all been into a pub at some point and you have a beer that doesn't quite taste right. It could be smiled and tapped it, but he hasn't tasted it. And he's looked it straight up.
Okay.
Could well be that it's dirty light. Quite unlikely. We do ours religiously once a week. It takes about 30 minutes. You flush them out with chemicals. But what happens is all the yeast starts to deposit in the tubes. That can give you richness to your taste. Could also be someone maybe hasn't had a lot of cellar training. And obviously the barrel goes at the bar. And they say to someone, can you go and change it? It's gone. And they'll go into the bar and they'll put a smaller one on to what's come off. They put the wrong size operation on for the lime. So for every pint of beer which is pulled off of the pumps, a pint of beer has to oxidise it again. Now these casks here are around 50 or 60 years old and they replace the wooden barrels which we used to use. Only up until about 10 years ago. But sadly, due to health and safety, we can't use them. They're not cost reflective and the gentleman who used to clean them sadly passed away. Our new way forward is these over here, these key casks.
Oh right.
A bit like wine in a box if you like. These are beer in a box. So, as you can see, there's an air pocket inside.
Yeah.
And they will fill the beer and it inflates the air pocket in them. So these are good for a few reasons. Through transportation, although they get shook up, it doesn't deposit in the belly of the cask because they're not laying that way round. So that's a good thing.
Right.
Second thing is, you can use them straight away when they arrive. The downsides of them is, they only hold 52 pints, but that's good for smaller breweries who don't sell as much beer. But you can only use them once, they're not recyclable. Will they be cost reflective? Hello. In 20 years from now.
Where's Joey?
He's just gone upstairs. Okay, well that does conclude my tour. Do you have any questions?
Not that I can think of actually, I'm just fascinated by this.
Yeah, key cast. I don't think they will replace the barrels completely. I think what will happen is, maybe in 20 years, a bit like the barrels in Europe, they will become plastic.
Yeah.
I think they will still have the spun and tapping facility onto them. Okay, I've got a little bit of information to tell you when we get back outside, but I'll tell you out there because it's a bit noisy in here.
Okay.
If you'd like to follow me this way.
No problem.
Okay, so I don't know how familiar you are with Bateman's Pub, but a little bit further down the road, we have a pub called The Chequers. It's a beautiful English traditional pub. One I suppose your parents used to take you to as a child. And years ago they used to transport the prisoners there. And what they would do is they would hold the prisoner upstairs, obviously awaiting sentence because he, maybe she, was naughty. And the guard would stay downstairs and get absolutely sloshed. So the prisoner used to escape through the sash windows. Funny enough, they don't hold the prisoners there anymore. Also years ago they used to have a dray horse called Limerick. And he was a big shire horse. But he was blind, but he never let the boys down. Sadly, one day Limerick passed away in the stables. He was actually Jacqueline's horse, who owns the company now. When she was a child, it was her pet. So, they come in here, and poor Limerick had passed away. And in those days, they used to send the horses to the glue factory. Because he was so loved, they didn't want to do that. And he got the boys together. And just over in our backyard, we have a huge willow tree. And they hand dug a hole to put the horse into. So they dragged the horse over there, but because he'd been laid in the stables for 2 days, rigor mortis had set in. So he was too big to fit in the hole because his legs were doing this. So the boys turned around and said, we can't dig this hole any deeper, we are exhausted. So they sawed the legs off of the horse. Obviously that gives another meaning to the word legless.
Legless.
Yeah. Okay, if you'd like to follow me this way. Have been upstairs in the artifacts room?
No, not yet.
Go upstairs and turn to the left. It's a beautiful artifact room. It's got loads of information about Bateman's pubs. And in there is a mill room. And it's where we actually keep our brides sometimes when they get married here.
Okay.
Not forever, of course. That's why she waits. And it's got a big, beautiful perspex ceiling. And you can see where the old workings of the mill used to be as well. So feel free to go up there as well.
Okay.
Oh, you're back.
Go down to the bottom and turn left. I'm sure Dave will help with anything else that you need.
Okay.
Thank you,
Nadine.
Spanhead Productions are a small independent sound recording company based in rural Hertfordshire. We specialise in creating content for all your podcasting needs, whether it be field recordings, vox pops, or capturing the atmosphere during social events. Editing is a very time-consuming job, so Spanhead Productions are on hand to take away some of the burden for you. Just advise us on how you'd like your content to sound, and we will do the rest. We can even help you design and manage a website for your podcast too. Visit us now, spanheadproductions.weebly.com. That's spamheadproductions.weebly.com.
Martin Cullimore wanted to arrange for us to take away a growler of Bateman's Gold so that we could review it on the show. But unfortunately, with all the toing and froing and also not knowing when we were going to be able to record a review show, it wasn't feasible as the beer would not keep and be at its best for review. However, after the tour, we made our way to the brewery bar, where they had Bateman's Gold on tap. And I must say, it's a lovely beer, but unusual in the fact that it's a modern style beer or ale brewed in a traditional way. I'll put photos of our day at Bateman's along with links to the brewery, and just in case you wanted to join the Bateman's Beer Club, there will be links to that too. Before I call time on the Garbage Pod Tap Room for another episode, I would just like to thank Martin Cullimore for taking time out to speak with us and the Dean for taking us around Bateman's Brewery. I'd also like to thank you all for listening, and we'll speak with you all again soon. Well, that about wraps it up for this episode of the Garbage Pod Tap Room. Be sure to visit www.thegarbagepod.weebly.com for the show notes for this or any other episode. Just look for the relevant tab on the menu. Let us know what you think of the show.
Send an email to garbagepod@virginmedia.com.
Because
your input is our output.
Or you can use the social media icons at the top of the page that include Twitter and Facebook. If you would like to subscribe to any of our podcasts, you can do so via iTunes, the RSS feed, and also TuneIn and Stitcher On Demand Radio. Don't forget to rate and review us. You can also listen to rebroadcasts of all our shows on the Awake Radio group. You can find a link on our podcast pages. If you like what we're doing here, then why not buy us a pint by clicking on the donate button on any of the podcast pages, and don't forget to spread the word about us.
The Garbage Pod is a Spamhead production.